Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Today on the Matt Walsh Show, a WPATH certified medical professional suggests that gender confirmation surgery, quote unquote, should include making creative genitals that don't resemble anything that belongs on the human body. This is the kind of horror that was always inevitable as the transgender movement rapidly becomes the transhumanist movement. Also, rowdy mobs of illegals are now forcibly pushing through the border. The family of the teenage girl who knocked her classmate unconscious and slammed her head into the pavement now says that the attacker is the real victim in the case. Imagine that. And Drew Barrymore declares that after three divorces, she feels totally liberated. We'll talk about all that and more today on The Matt Walsh Show. I'm here today because my mother chose life, and you're here today because your mother chose life also. The miracle of life is a gift everyone deserves because every life is precious. That's why we've partnered with Preborn's network of clinics. Preborn introduces unborn babies to their mothers through ultrasound. After hearing her baby's heartbeat and seeing her precious baby, she could be twice as likely to choose life. Through love, compassion, and free ultrasounds, Preborn has rescued over 280,000 unborn babies, and every day their clinics rescue 200 unborn babies. Now that is a miracle. One ultrasound is just $28, the cost of a dinner, or you can sponsor five ultrasounds for $140, helping to rescue five unborn babies. Any amount will help. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation will go towards saving babies. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com/Matt. That's preborn.com/Matt. Well, it's been more than 2 weeks since the WPATH files demonstrated very clearly that so-called transgender medicine is the single most unethical and barbaric practice that the medical industry has ever endorsed or conceived of. It's a coordinated effort to permanently destroy the bodies of thousands of young children and adults as well. The doctors who are involved in this butchery understand very well that kids cannot consent to permanent sterilization and amputation. They've said it on tape, as the WPATH files prove, and yet, despite these revelations, no major hospital has announced that they're cutting ties with WPATH. In fact, they haven't responded to the files at all. Instead, as of today, hospitals like UCLA and Mass General proudly declare on their websites that they carefully follow WPATH's so-called standards of care as they castrate their underage patients. And what this means is that the medical industry is all in on WPATH. Hospitals and medical associations aren't going to disassociate with these quacks, at least not until they're forced to. They simply don't care about the fact that they're ruining the lives of children who can't provide informed consent. And in practical terms, for now, this means that some of the most disturbed and ideologically driven deviants on the planet, the experts at WPATH, will continue to write the book on so-called trans medicine. They have free rein to do so. So it's worth taking a closer look at who exactly these experts are, since no one else in the medical establishment is interested in doing that. As Genspec highlighted this week, one of these experts is a New York psychotherapist using the name Laura Jacobs. And on his website, Jacobs proudly lists his affiliation with WPATH, including his work on formulating WPATH's standards of care. Redux looked further into Laura Jacobs' background. They found that he, quote, influenced the development of transgender health guidelines regarding gender dysphoria in adolescence, and previously contributed a chapter to an anthology in which he promotes BDSM practices, including age play and genital torture. That's in quotes. Apparently, this is the kind of resume that qualifies a man to become a WPATH certified expert and to come up with the highly permissive criteria that doctors use in order to castrate children all over the country. And yet, if you look a little closer, This guy is somehow even weirder and more unsettling than his bio would suggest, which is saying a lot because the bio suggests that he's extremely weird and unsettling. This is a video that was found by a researcher named Johnny Bell. It's from a TEDx talk that Jacobs delivered a couple of years ago. I want you to watch as Laura Jacobs begins by explaining his own quote-unquote gender identity. Watch.
Now, I identify as trans and genderqueer, and to me that means I like to play with gender, I like to problematize gender. I like to confront gender norms in how I present and how I move through the world. I feel female and male. I feel both and neither one. And so many of the labels that we use in this area feel equally authentic and inauthentic. And I simply can't tell when one gender ends and another begins.
Now, there's more to this clip, and it gets a lot worse from there, which you'll see in a minute. But it's important to stop there and highlight the complete and total incoherence of what you just heard. WPATH-certified medical professional Laura Jacobs says that he likes to play with gender, which means that he's genderqueer. He says that he feels female and male. He also feels both and neither at the same time. And he says that various labels feel equally authentic and inauthentic. Now, it's hard to think of a better illustration of the way trans activists can string sentences together that mean absolutely nothing. It's a characteristic that every single trans activist has in common without fail. They advance their ideas not by convincing anybody, but by confusing them. Authenticity is the opposite of inauthenticity. Male is the opposite of female. If you think you can that something can be two mutually incompatible things at the same exact time, then you are extremely confused on every conceivable level. I mean, this is no different than saying that somebody can be a bachelor and married at the same time, or that a square can be a square while equally being a circle. It's the definition of nonsense. And this is how gender ideology is promoted, not with arguments or explanations, but with an avalanche of pure, unbridled nonsense that the ideologues hope will distract and confuse you so much that you just throw up your hands and agree with whatever crap they're spewing. And here I'm assuming that Jacobs knows that he's saying a bunch of nonsensical drivel. If he thinks that it actually makes sense, then instead of working on medical standards that every major hospital follows, these 30 seconds alone are strong evidence that Laura Jacobs should certainly seek some help himself. Although what comes next is even better evidence, I think, of that last point. Laura Jacobs doesn't stop there. Narcissists never admit defeat, even when their own arguments are self-defeating and totally nonsensical. Instead, Jacobs launches into an extremely creepy, to say the least, transhumanist monologue. And as you watch this, keep in mind again that this is a representative for WPATH, which every major medical organization and hospital currently pretends is a legitimate authority, and in fact, the authority on so-called trans healthcare. Watch.
Medical interventions allow some of us to change our primary and secondary sex characteristics. We have phalloplasty that creates a penis and a scrotum and testicles. We have vaginoplasty that creates a vagina and a vulva. We have chest masculinization and breast augmentation, all of which create bodies that are readable to outsiders, but it's clear that cisgender bodies are still the reference point. But will technology give us options that are artistic and creative? Artificial limbs even now can transmit rudimentary sensory data back to the wearer. And it seems to me that a fully functional, artificial, sensate penis is maybe not that far off. But do we have to stick to penis and vagina norms? Can we have genitalia that look like flowers or abstract sculpture? Can we have multiple? Can they be interchangeable? And what about other areas of the body?
Do we have to stick to penis and vagina norms, asks Jacobs. Can we have genitalia that look like flowers or abstract sculptures? Can we have multiple? Can they be interchangeable? I mean, this is body horror at its most deranged. If a filmmaker made a horror movie where people were walking around with genitals that looked like abstract sculptures, I would think that the filmmaker was a deranged creep. But Jacobs wants to do this in real life. And once you get past the raw human disgust that you feel listening to somebody talk like this, you begin to realize that It was inevitable that we'd get to this point. Transgenderism, the belief that people can change their gender, has always had a lot in common with transhumanism, which involves the use of technology to alter the human condition. It was unavoidable that the two ideologies would converge, as they are really the same ideology, dimensions of the same basic idea anyway. Both transgenderism and transhumanism are grounded in a rejection of both the classical and Christian traditions of human nature. They want to make human beings gods over themselves, over their own nature. You know, he uses the word creative, that our limbs and organs should be creative. And he means it in a kind of a literal sense, that he wants to have the power of creation over his own body. Now, transgenderism and transhumanism have more in common with Machiavelli, who taught that the only truth is effectual truth, meaning that, you know, it's what you can control. There's no transcendent authority in this understanding. Humans are, again, their own gods. That is the essence of transgenderism, and now it's coming to the forefront. More and more people identifying as transgender are admitting that, you know, they're not really receiving medical care or anything like that. That was always a lie, one that WPATH was founded in order to spread. Now we're seeing so-called transgender individuals coming right out and admitting that their real goal is to embrace transhumanism. They don't just want to change genders, they want to redesign their entire body. They don't want to resemble men or women. They want to carve up their body parts into, you know, starfish and flowers. And it's not just one WPATH quack who's pushing this, as disturbing as that would be all on its own. The child psychologist Elliot Kamenetsky recently noted that the popular website Healthline recommends that visitors talk to a surgeon if they're interested in splitting their penis in half or creating other various designs out of their genitalia. There are various diagrams on Healthline's website that are too graphic to put on air. And this is supposedly a leading website that people turn to for medical information. Like WPATH, they're trying to normalize genital mutilation, not in the name of transgenderism, but in the name of transhumanism, which is sort of the next step. Spend some time on social media and you'll find this idea is catching on. Here's a few clips from an upcoming documentary on this topic. Listen to how young people are talking about transgenderism and how they perceive themselves. Watch.
God blessed me by making me transsexual for the same reason God made wheat but not bread and fruit but not wine, so that humanity might share in the act of creation.
Hello guys and gals and non-binary pals. You know, life isn't about finding yourself. It's about creating yourself.
God made trans people for the same reason he made wheat but not bread.
And God created grapes but not wine,
so that humanity can share in the art of creation.
So there was always a contradiction between, obviously, transgenderism and Christianity. The two are diametrically opposed to each other. And we see why. You know, now a lot of trans activists are making that contradiction explicit. They're denying that man was made in God's likeness, which is obviously foundational biblical teaching. And instead, they're equating man with various inert objects like wheat and grapes, which means the whole pretense of transgender medicine is long gone. We're entering into cultish, blasphemous territory here, which is where we've always been, really. And they're basically admitting it. And again, this is a rapidly growing segment of the so-called trans community that's talking like this. Go on YouTube and you'll find an assortment of demented videos about so-called trans people who think they've transformed into lizards and dragons and other species, both mythical and not. And they have millions of views. Here are just two of them. Watch.
I am presently the most modified transsexual in the world. I have 8 horns on my forehead. I have had my ears removed, my nose reshaped, most of my teeth removed. I've had the white part, the sclera of my eyeballs, permanently stained green. I've had my tongue bifurcated. My whole face is tattooed. And I have had some scarifications in my chin and branding on my chest and on my wrist. My transformation is, for me, the greatest journey of my lifetime.
I am Tiamat Legion Medusa, and I am a genderless dragon. I was born a male. When I look in the mirror, I see a creature. I don't see a human.
A genderless dragon. Now, of course, in reality, he's neither genderless nor a dragon. But, you know, he is as much a dragon as he is genderless all the same. But, you know, then again, of course, if a man can become a woman, then there's no reason why you can't become a dragon. And the upshot of all this insanity, again, is that the veneer of transgenderism as some kind of serious medical discipline is fading, and it's fading very, very quickly. We've seen how trans activists claim to be preoccupied with gender-affirming care and freedom, but in many cases, it's really a Trojan horse for the weirdest and most unhinged excesses of transhumanism. And make no mistake about it, top hospitals in the country endorse this. Until they disavow WPATH and, you know, freak shows like Laura Jacobs who work with them, then there's really no other conclusion we can draw. Increasingly, transgenderism is explicitly about mutilation and body modification. I mean, it always has been about those things, but increasingly is explicitly about those things in order to achieve some sort of godlike status. And it's very clear that these ghouls will sacrifice many more children on their quest for divinity unless and until they're finally destroyed for good. Now let's get to our five headlines. You know, I sent a portrait to Paint Your Life a few years ago. The process was quick and easy. I love their work so much that I've used them multiple times since then. With Mother's Day and Father's Day around the corner, Paint Your Life is the perfect gift for someone you love. They created hand-painted portraits that fit almost any budget and are a great gift idea for your mother, your father, or both. Paint Your Life seriously transforms your photos into a one-of-a-kind, beautiful hand-painted portrait by professional artists. What I really love is how they can create anything you imagine. Put yourself in a location you've always wanted to go to, or add a lost loved one to a special occasion to create the portrait of your dreams. You can choose the artist, art medium, whether that's oil, acrylic, watercolor, or charcoal. They even have a great selection of quality frames. Their user-friendly platform lets you order a custom-made, hand-painted portrait in less than 5 minutes. You'll get your professional hand-painted portrait in as little as 2 weeks. Give the most meaningful gift with paintyourlife.com. There's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting and free shipping. To get the special offer, text the word Matt to 87204. That's Matt to 87204. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. So from the Telegraph, dozens of migrants smashed through a border checkpoint guarded by armed troops in Texas on Thursday in the latest chaotic scenes at the U.S. border. In a video shared on social media, a surge of male migrants pushed past a row of U.S. National Guard soldiers in El Paso, having earlier torn down razor wires and fences. The group had been detained on the U.S. side of the Rio Grande. According to witnesses, the crowd of men had been pushed south of the wire in the middle of the night by troops. A few hours later, the men grew impatient and broke through barriers, running towards a section of the border wall where they could be processed by officials. Okay, we have two videos here. Well, there's a news report about it. But before we play the news report, here's the actual raw footage of this group, this violent mob pushing through the border and through the National Guard. Let's just put that up. Okay, now you see they break through. So they push through and they ultimately break through the chain there, the human chain set up by the National Guard. Before we talk about this, here's a little more information from a local news report.
Shocking video highlights the growing frustrations of presumptive asylum seekers and the efforts of federal authorities to prevent the illegal crossings. Our KTSM 9 news reporter Tirza Ortiz is live with more. Tirza.
Well, Skylar, that's right. We just watched that chaotic video of hours ago right behind me that took place at gate 36. Now the confrontation comes just a day after the Court of Appeals put a block on the controversial immigration bill known as Senate Bill 4. Our partners at Border Report say today's events come days after documented verbal confrontations between the Texas National Guard and migrants. However, nothing has ever escalated past shouts up until this afternoon. This video taken by our KTSM crew shows two soldiers holding a man down on the ground while two women shout and plead for the soldiers to stop. This chaotic scene is something Border Patrol agents say is avoidable.
Take a pause there. I mainly wanted to play that report from KTSM embassy affiliate in El Paso because of that. The great phrase at the beginning, what was it? Presumptive asylum seeker. So now rowdy, violent groups of male illegal immigrants are presumptive asylum seekers, meaning, you know, they haven't gone through, of course, any legal channel to seek asylum. We don't even know that they will go. I mean, they're not going to go through any legal channels. All we know is that there's just this mob of people at the border trying to sneak in. But we presume they want asylum. So they're presumptive asylum seekers, which means now that every single illegal immigrant who comes across the border is either an asylum seeker or, if not, a presumptive asylum seeker. That covers all of them, and that's the way that it works now. And as to the video of those guys pushing past the National Guard, look, if we're going to post the military down there, but we're not going to let them use force, then you might as well not have them there at all. In fact, I'd rather not have the National Guard. It's better to not have them if they can't use force, because it's embarrassing. I mean, it's pathetic. The image of having the National Guard down there and then these illegal immigrants pushed right through them, that is the image of a weak, neutered, impotent nation. One where the military is posted on the border, but you can walk right up to them and push them out of the way and continue right along. It is absolutely pathetic. Now, am I advocating for the military to shoot illegals who are trying to sneak across? I'm not advocating anything. In fact, I very much don't want to see that. I'd prefer if none of this was happening. I very much would prefer if we had a strong, orderly border, which makes for a peaceful border and nobody gets hurt. And that's what I want. That's what I advocate for. That's what I would love to see. But if an angry mob is physically assaulting the National Guardsmen that are standing there to protect our nation, they have every right, and I would say a duty, to use whatever physical means necessary to regain control of the situation. And the result, however unfortunate, will be the fault of the angry mob, who have no right to be there in the first place. This is not your country. And this should be obvious. You know, it shouldn't even be controversial. If you're going to put men with guns anywhere to protect anything, then implicitly you have to allow them to use force when necessary and when they're attacked by violent mobs. If you're not going to let them do that, then they shouldn't be there. Also, even without the violent mob, I mean, this is a matter of national security as well. And we know that the people that run our country will never frame it that way. They won't talk about it that way. I mean, they'll use the term national security all the time, but they won't use it to talk about the border when in that case it actually applies. And this is what gets me, because our government will go overseas and they will drone bomb Middle Eastern villages and kill lots of people, including innocent civilians. And we'll do all this in the name of national security. And most Americans won't care that much, won't be that upset. Not a big scandal. Just as one example, think back to last year when Biden sent a drone to, I think it was Syria, to kill an Al-Qaeda leader. And, they incinerated the guy and they bragged about it, put the video up. They sent the video out so we could all see. And then we find out a few days later that, oh, no, the guy they killed was a father of 10 who was an innocent civilian and had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. And it wasn't even considered a scandal. I don't think Biden himself ever answered any questions about it. And if it was a scandal, it was like a scandal. It's like a couple days, people were a little upset. Hey, you know, and then they could just say, oops, yeah, we got that one wrong. Our bad. Whoops. So overseas, we have a very relaxed, very generous view of what counts as national security. And we're willing, and when I say we, I mean the government. So it's not we. They are willing to kill thousands of people over the years for the sake of national security. And all the people they're killing are thousands of miles away from this country. And there's no real risk that any one of them individually will end up coming here. Yet somehow the idea of using force to protect our border, our actual national security, is unthinkable to a lot of people. And the same administration that's off killing Syrian civilians would never dream of allowing the National Guard to use any kind of force in direct defense of itself and of the nation itself. All right. This is from the Daily Wire. Representative Jerry Nadler took a wave of backlash on Thursday after he claimed during a House hearing that men do not compete in women's sports. Nadler's comments was a response to Representative Harriet Hageman, who had offered into evidence a list of instances in which men had usurped women's sporting events to make them their own. Let's watch that moment with Representative Nadler.
Ask unanimous consent to submit for the record the instances of men hijacking women's sports and the various examples that we have demonstrating not only the injuries that have been suffered by women as men have participated in girls' sports, but also the women who girls and women who have been affected by this, including Riley Gaines when Will Thomas decided to join the women's swimming team in Pennsylvania. Again, this bill
not is objection.
I object to concluding these mistruths in the record.
There's an objection.
Okay. I think that speaks volumes as well. If you do not want in the record the information about the impact.
So he calls it mistruths, no explanation. No further explanation is offered. This is what they do. They simply deny that the truth is true. And we're left to speculate about what exactly Nadler is denying. Is he denying the whole controversy? Is he denying that the existence of people like Leah Thomas? Is he declaring that none of this is real? Fallon Fox, the man who beat women to a pulp, cracked their skulls in MMA. Like, is he denying that any of that even happened? It's possible. It's possible that he's declaring that all of the stuff we have all seen happen over the last 5 years, the last 10 years, didn't happen at all. And it didn't happen because he, Nadler, wishes that it didn't happen or wants us to not know that it happened and therefore it didn't. So he could mean that. Alternatively, Nadler could, of course, be saying that men have not invaded women's sports, that is a mistruth because all of the men who invaded women's sports are not really men. How are they not men? Well, because they said they aren't men. And if somebody says they aren't a man, then that automatically makes them not a man. And the biological advantages that men have suddenly evaporate once a man declares that he's not actually a man. You know, it's like if a 400-pound wrestler jumps off the top rope and lands right on top of you. It's not going to crush you as long as he declares ahead of time that he's not really 400 pounds, that he's actually 85 pounds. And if he just says that, then the fact that he says it and believes it makes it effectively true and you'll be safe. That's what Nadler is saying, maybe. Either way, he's denying the plain reality that's in front of all of our faces. And because he's a Democrat and because transgenderism obviously is sacrosanct, he will never be asked for any further explanation and he won't offer one either. All right, moving to this, New York Post has this report. The family of the Missouri girl who has been charged with beating 16-year-old Kaylee Gain into unconsciousness says she's the real victim and had been harassed and bullied before the caught-on-video assault. The 15-year-old's aunt told the Daily Mail that her niece, described as an honor student with a stellar record at Hazelwood East High School, was defending herself during the viral March 8th fight in Spanish Lakes, Missouri. The accused attacker's loved ones are asking the juvenile court system to show compassion for the teen, and they're seeking $150,000 in donations towards her legal defense. The teen suspect's family on Saturday launched a petition on change.org begging Chief Juvenile Officer Rick Gaines of the 21st Circuit Court not to charge her as an adult. The petition highlighted the girl's many academic and athletic accomplishments, including the fact that she speaks four languages, plays the violin in the school orchestra, and is on the volleyball team and had recently been selected for college-level AP classes. Quote, prior to an incident on March 8th where she was seen defending herself from harassment and bullying, she had never been in trouble. Her work as a scholar, was tainted by the bullying she had to endure at school. Okay. A few things on this one. First of all, the idea that this skinny little white girl was harassing and bullying the black kids is just ridiculous. Like, give me a break. Nobody believes that. Okay. Nobody looks at Kaylee Gain, the child that was the victim here. Nobody looks at her and says, oh yeah, she's the bully in this scenario. It didn't happen. I guarantee it didn't happen. But of course, even if it did, it doesn't matter. Because once somebody is knocked down, once they're lying on the pavement, the supposed bullying and harassment that they were allegedly guilty of is over, right? And you can leave the situation. Your claim of self-defense is now, it ends there. And when you get on top of that person, you begin banging their head into the pavement, not just once, but many times, over and over again, until they're unconscious. And then even while they're unconscious, you're still banging their head against the pavement. You have now clearly exceeded the bounds. I mean, you have far, far exceeded the bounds of anything that can be considered self-defense or a justified response to alleged bullying. Bullying that, again, I'm sure never happened. But, you know, the underlying problem here, of course, is the total lack of accountability. If this girl, if this attacker, if her guilt can be mitigated at all, it's not because she's supposedly an honor roll student, which, I'll be honest, I have trouble buying that, but speaks four languages fluently, sure. But also, doesn't matter, makes no difference. Even if that's true, doesn't matter. Even if she was bullied, doesn't matter. None of that mitigates it. But if anything does mitigate her guilt, it's that she clearly was not raised well. Most likely she was not raised at all, really. No accountability, no discipline, no moral formation. So that's the real mitigating factor here. And I do think it's a mitigating factor. You know, when you've got a kid who's 15 or 16 and just they have awful or absent parents and they're acting out in terrible ways, it's fair to say that like a big part of the reason why they're doing that is because the parents failed them. Although in this case, the girl still should be charged as an adult and sent to prison, because even with all that taken into account, the fact that she tried to kill somebody and almost did overrides all of that. You know, there are lines that you cross, and once you cross that line, it doesn't matter why you crossed it. It doesn't matter what's going on in your life. It doesn't matter whatever trauma you've suffered. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter once you've crossed that line. There have to be consequences for that behavior, severe consequences, no matter how poorly she was raised. And if being raised poorly was an excuse, something to let people off the hook, then nearly everybody in prison right now should be let out of prison, because which there are plenty of DAs and judges in this country that would love to do exactly that, of course. And I'm not saying that the family, you know, it's not that they should come out publicly and condemn the girl. I wouldn't expect them to do that. But you don't need to offer excuses for her. You don't need to imply or explicitly argue that her good grades are somehow a mitigating factor. You don't need to try to blame the victim here by saying that she was bullying. You don't need to try to fundraise and get petitions signed. You know, if the family said nothing at all publicly except that they're praying for the full recovery of the victim, then that would tell me that this girl, you know, is more of a bad apple who lashed out violently despite being raised well. And that can happen after all. Good parenting is no guarantee against kids doing horrible things. But what this behavior, it tells us, confirms for us that, you know, what we already expected, which is that this is a whole family of people who refuse to be accountable, refuse to hold themselves and hold their children to any sort of moral standard, because that's what it comes down to. You have to establish moral standards for your kids and hold them to it. That's the work of parenting. I mean, that's not the whole deal, because you also have to provide for their physical needs and all of that, and food, shelter, and the rest of it. But so much of it is simply establishing moral standards and holding your kids to it. That's the hard part. And the hardest thing about it is that when you establish those standards for your kids, that means first and foremost holding yourself to the same standards. So if one of the standards you have for your kids is that you want them to be patient, well, then you have to be patient. And the more that you break that standard of patience, the more impatient you are, the more that they will follow your lead and fail to live up to the standards that you are also failing to live up to. And this is what parenting is. But many of these kids, they're raised without any standards at all. And in fact, I think if you were to ask the parents, And by that, I mean usually the mom, because so often the dad is not there. So being another big part of the problem. But if you were to ask the mom, like you were to take the, say, the mom of this girl, and you were just to ask her, what are the moral standards that you hold your child to? What are the moral standards in your home for your family? I'm guessing that if you were to ask that question, you wouldn't even, they wouldn't even be able to answer it. There would be no answer. Even like in theory, she couldn't tell you. Because the thought of establishing moral standards for a child never even occurred to her. And I think we can clearly see that was the case here. Which again is no excuse for the kid. Not when the crime is this bad. And one other thought I had about this, remember that case we discussed several weeks ago? There was the school shooter who whose parents were charged and convicted also in the crime. I think they were convicted of, I believe it was manslaughter is what they were convicted of. And basically, I mean, even though they obviously didn't, you know, shoot up the school and it was never claimed that they were involved in any way in like organizing it or anything like that, but they were essentially charged and convicted of being really bad parents, being really bad, negligent parents. And the claim was that, hey, if you were better parents, if you had done your job, then this never would have happened, which is true, probably, that if they had, I mean, certainly true that they were bad parents, probably true that if they had been better parents, this would not have happened. But my point at the time, if you recall, is that even though I agree that they are largely to blame for what happened, I don't think you can charge and convict them like, I mean, they did, but I think that opens up a can of worms. It opens up a Pandora's box, whatever metaphor you want to use. Because then what do you do in a case like this? Like, yes, in this case, this is not as bad as a school shooting, because fortunately, the victim has not died. But here you have a brutal assault, an attempted murder that almost certainly would not have happened if this girl was raised better. In this case, you can almost certainly, to a large degree, blame the parents. So are we going to arrest them too? I mean, why do they get off the hook? If this is what we're doing now, if we're arresting parents for bad parenting when their child does something vicious and brutal and violent, how does it begin and end with that one case? As if that's the one example of really bad parents who have kids who do really bad, terrible things. I don't see how you can justify that. I want to play this quick clip from a preschool teacher talking about how her students, barely call them students, in preschool, but anyway, they are very good allies, she says. Listen.
I posted that video on my Instagram as well, and it got an insane amount of hate. So I'm going to share more positive interactions with the preschool age kids I work with. For context, I'm a trans person who does not pass as the gender they identify with. Yesterday, one of the other staff came up to me and she was talking to me and then started talking to the kids about me. And she used she, her pronouns for me. And one of the kids interrupted her and went, he's a boy. So, you know what? Pop off. My biggest allies are 3 years old.
Your biggest allies are 3 years old. Do you know why? Have you thought about why that is? Well, it's because three-year-olds naturally accept anything you tell them. Three-year-olds have no capacity at all to think critically about anything that an adult says to them. Three-year-olds will have no skepticism at all about anything. Three-year-olds believe in the tooth fairy. You know, they believe that a magical fairy flies through the window at night and confiscates discarded teeth. Not only do they believe it, but it doesn't occur to them to be freaked out by the idea. Magical fat man watching them while they sleep and knowing when they're awake and knows if you've been bad or good. Yeah, believe it implicitly and without the slightest skepticism. And again, without even, you know, thinking that there's anything terrifying about this prospect. They just accept it. Because three-year-olds believe anything. And not only that, not only do they believe anything, but they believe the framing that you give it. So you tell them this is happening and it's good. You know, the magical fat man is watching you everywhere you go, keeping a list. But it's a good thing, though. And they'll believe that. And that's why, because they're three. And that's why they're your biggest allies. Because to you, an ally is somebody who compliantly accepts whatever nonsensical claim you make. An ally is somebody with no independent thought process of their own. An ally is someone who doesn't ask skeptical questions, right? An ally is someone who applauds you no matter what you do. An ally is someone who won't even raise an eyebrow skeptically, like no matter what you say. So you could be a woman who's just a woman, making no effort to appear anything like anything but a woman, but you say, yeah, I'm a man. In spite of all that, I'm a man. You know, and to you, an ally is someone who goes, oh, okay, all right. Someone who believes anything and everything you say, no matter what. So yeah, your biggest allies are three-year-olds. Another way of saying that is this, your victims are 3 years old. You know, your primary victims are 3 years old, which is really what you are saying. Your brainwashing victims are 3 years old. Your indoctrination subjects are 3 years old. I think that's what's actually being conveyed. Let's get to the comment section. If you're a man, it's required that you grow a beard. Hey, we're the Sweet Baby Gang. Keeping windshields clean is always a pain, especially with all the rain we've been getting here in Nashville. That's why I am so grateful to have Windshield Wow. Windshield Wow is an innovative windshield cleaning device that uses two magnetic cleaning paddles, one on the inside and one on the outside of your car, to clean both sides of a windshield, all from the outside. Being able to clean both the front and the inside window at the same time is a game changer. I wish I had one of these years ago. Windshield Wow applies firm cleaning pressure and is super thin to get into those tight dashboard areas. All you got to do is push around the outside paddle and the inside follows automatically, leaving your windshield squeaky clean. Washing your car windshield enhances visibility and driving safety and helps preserve the integrity of your vehicle's glass and paintwork. It's a simple yet essential aspect of car maintenance that shouldn't be overlooked. What are you waiting for? Go to windshieldwow.com. Use code Walsh at checkout for a special discount. That's windshieldwow.com, code Walsh. A few comments here. First one says, for people like me on the road 365 days a year, Planet Fitness makes it notoriously difficult to cancel a membership. Their rules say you have to go back to your local gym to cancel. That is until I found out on your show. The quickest way to cancel your membership is to take a picture in the locker room and post it. Then they'll cancel it for you. Hashtag cancel Planet Fitness. Yeah, that is apparently one way to do it quickly, although I certainly cannot endorse that method. And it is true that, you know, when we talked about Planet Fitness yesterday, that although they have been, you know, they've been notoriously woke for a long time, but this seems to be the first boycott Planet Fitness effort that has really taken hold. And I think one of the reasons is this, that, well, as we mentioned, they're everywhere. You know, they're all over the country. They're open 24/7. They're really cheap. And so cheap and convenient. It's very, very difficult to have a successful boycott campaign against something that is cheap and convenient, because Americans are hardwired to prioritize cheap and convenient above everything else. But the other thing is what you mentioned, that they make it so hard to cancel your membership. I mean, you have to like climb a mountain with an offering for a guru perched on a tree somewhere and, you know, wait 5 to 7 business days to find out if your cancellation request was accepted. Although the good news is that I'm pretty sure, and I'm not sure if this is one of the reasons why this latest boycott effort is actually actually gaining ground, but I'm pretty sure that you, in some cases now, you can actually cancel your Planet Fitness membership online. I've seen a couple people post that I don't know the specifics, but I think certain people, from what I've read, you can go online to your membership portal or whatever it is and cancel it from there. So just a little tip, if you're looking to cancel your Planet Fitness membership, which everybody should, at least go check to see if you can do it online. If you can't, then yeah, you can't. They won't let you can't call. You know, you have to go in person, and they make it as hard as they possibly can. Hey, Matt, I agree with your eagle comparison, but if you look at the protections of sea turtle eggs, it's even more absurd. Unborn turtles have more rights than unborn humans. And I love turtles, but really, yeah, that's true. I mean, we talked about eagles because the federal government happens to be prosecuting somebody who killed bald eagles. In that case, yeah, I mean, he killed, what was it, 3,600 bald eagles? I have nothing wrong in principle. I have no problem in principle with prosecuting someone who is like a serial killer of bald eagles. I think you could certainly make an argument for that. And even the argument that we give a certain amount of extra weight to the bald eagle because of its symbolic significance. You know, I believe in symbolic significance. I think that that's an important thing, and cherish the symbols of this country. You know, we don't want to take a totally materialistic view of these things. We could always say that the American flag is nothing but, it's technically just a piece of cloth, right? But it has symbolic significance. Symbolic significance means something. And I'm okay with applying that to bald eagles. The problem is when we imbue them with much greater significance, moral and legal significance, than human beings. But as you point out, there are even better comparisons that better illustrate the absurdity of it, and probably, yes, sea turtle eggs. Now, it's true of bald, the egg thing is true of bald eagles, too. You know, you can't kill a bald eagle, and if you were to destroy a bald eagle egg, you would be prosecuted under the assumption, right, that destroying a bald eagle egg is the same thing as destroying an actual bald eagle that has been hatched. And the same goes with sea turtle eggs. Why can't you destroy sea turtle eggs? Well, because you can't harm sea turtles. What's the connection? Well, because the law recognizes that there's no difference between destroying a sea turtle egg and destroying a sea turtle. It would make no sense. It would make no sense for someone to plead and say, yeah, I understand that sea turtles are protected, but I didn't destroy a sea turtle. I just destroyed a sea turtle egg. That's all. No, in that context, we would say, well, what do you mean? What's the difference? It's the same thing. And yet with human beings, we do draw a distinction. With human beings, legally, we say, the federal government says, and many states still say, that to destroy an unborn human being is not the same as destroying a human being. Finally, my 12-year-old son was suspended from middle school for 2 days for the following joke. Why doesn't Mexico have an Olympic team? Because every Mexican who can run, jump, and swim is already here in America. He was suspended for being racist. He's in sixth grade, and it was hilarious. It is a great joke. That's an oldie but a goodie. That's a classic. That's a joke that I think middle schoolers have been telling that joke for decades. And the only difference is that when I was in middle school, you know, you could make a joke like that. Not like you could make a joke like that. You certainly weren't going to get suspended for it. Maybe a teacher would write you up or something if there happened to be one. But the other thing too is that you could make a joke like that around your Mexican friends and they would laugh about it. It is actually, you're laughing about it as the parent, which I mean, it is funny. Like, the joke is funny. I can understand the humor of it. I'm glad that you have a good sense of humor about it. I think I'm angrier about it than you are, apparently, because, that's actually outrageous that he was suspended for 2 days for that joke. That is just insane. Balance of Nature fruits and veggies is the most convenient way to get whole fruits and vegetables daily. They use an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing their natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruits and veggie capsules are fruits and veggies. Imagine trying to eat 31 different fruits and vegetables every day. That sounds miserable and time-consuming. It's just not possible to do. Well, with Balance of Nature, there's never been an easier way to ensure you get your daily dose of fruits and vegetables. Go to balanceofnature.com, use promo code Walsh to get 35% off your first set of fruits and vegetables and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code Walsh. Spring break season is here, and Jeremy's Razors is all set for the journey with the Precision 5 Go Bag. Inside this travel essential is everything you need to look great on the go. The Precision 5 handle, 4 cartridges, Jeremy's body soap, all neatly packed into a waterproof travel bag. These products altogether would normally cost almost $37, but right now you can get the Precision 5 Go Bag for $19.99. Leave the woke behind and join the alternative economy with a company that aligns with your values, Jeremy's Razors. Head over to jeremysrazors.com to get your Precision 5 Go Bag today. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. Today for our daily cancellation, we turn to Drew Barrymore. The actress turned talk show host recently had a lot of rather glowing things to say about divorce. Barrymore has been divorced three times. That is, she has failed at marriage three times. She has broken her vows three times. And now she pretends to be very happy about it. She expressed that happiness in a conversation this week with Marie Osmond, who has two divorces under her belt. But before we get to that conversation, you should know that Barrymore has been very open about her divorce, her divorces, for a long time. In fact, one might say she's been far too open about them. A few years ago, Barrymore invited one of her ex-husbands, Tom Green, onto her show, where they proceeded to have an unbearably awkward conversation on television in front of a live studio audience for reasons that are not quite clear. Watch.
I've had two nights of great sleep in my life before my daughters were born. And I don't know why, but sleep is like, it's just been like a weird thing for me. And I remember this night just being so content. And I was at your parents' lake house. And I remember hearing all their voices upstairs. And I was just by myself. And I was going to sleep. And I was like, yeah, this is what, you know, safety and contentedness feels before you're going to sleep. And I will never forget that night. And I love your parents, and I really love you, and I celebrate you. And, you know, when you say, like, 20 years, it's sometimes it's the blink of an eye. And sometimes you're like, oh, my God, we've lived so much in these last 20 years. You've had a whole life, and I've had a whole life. And it's just really nice to come together and check in and talk about it. It just, it thrills me to no end. And I think the world of you, and I celebrate you, and I always have, and I always will.
Thank you, Drew. Thank you. This is really, I was so happy when you invited me on the show. It's been too long. We should have, you know, it's nice to reconnect. We really did not talk for about 15 years, I guess. And this is really the first time we've looked at each other face to face in 15 years.
How do people watch this show? I mean, what, just to start with, Sleep is, I have a weird thing about sleep. Like, what, your weird thing is that you like to sleep? That's not weird. We all, as human beings, we all enjoy sleeping. We need to sleep, all of us. So it's not like a unique, quirky thing about you, Drew Barrymore, is that you enjoy sleeping. But a few other takeaways here. First of all, she divorced the guy, didn't speak to him at all for 15 years, apparently, then invited him onto her talk show to have an emotional heart-to-heart in front of a television audience, which is bizarre behavior to say the least. Second, she recounts a story of feeling safe and content when she was married to Tom Green. And yet she divorced him mere months after this cherished memory took place. Her marriage to Tom Green lasted from 2001 all the way to the year 2002. And she continues in that conversation to profess her love and admiration for the man and claims that she's always loved and celebrated and admired him, the man that she divorced after 12 months and proceeded to cut out of her life completely for the next two decades. If that's how she treats people that she loves and admires, one would hate to imagine how she treats people that she actually doesn't like. And that brings us to the conversation this week in which Drew Barrymore declares that after three failed marriages, she is, like, totally liberated. Here's the Daily Wire. Quote, actress Drew Barrymore said she's not embarrassed about being divorced three times. Instead, she feels liberated. Quote, I had so much shame around divorce, and for some reason, something happened, and I said, I'm no longer willing to feel this way. And it just lifted for me. Barrymore said of her own experience. She went on to describe how she sees divorce as preserving, quote, the precious commodity we have on this planet, which is only our time. And when you're truly in a situation that isn't functioning the way that optimally it hopes and wishes to be, we accept that, and we improve our quality of life by moving forward. Divorce now, to me, I don't have shame around it. I'm, like, totally liberated, Barrymore added. Now, Marie Osmond unsurprisingly agreed, quote, talk show guest and fame singer Marie Osmond agreed that divorce could be positive. She said that while she thinks married couples should be doing everything possible to make a marriage work, she also stressed that both parties should do the work. Quote, I also believe that there are some divorces made in heaven. In my situation, I divorced at 50, and I had eight children that I needed to support, take care of. I was basically the breadwinner. Now, you know, it never ceases to amaze me that that people can live for so many years, and in Barrymore's case, 5 decades, and yet learn absolutely nothing, gain no wisdom at all. Because wisdom, as we can see, is not automatically accrued with age. It is offered. Opportunities are presented to obtain it, but you have to actively participate in the process of obtaining that wisdom. If you don't, then you run the risk of becoming like Drew Barrymore, pushing 50, but with all the insight of a 19-year-old sorority girl. And there are many ways to fail at life, you know, But one of them, maybe the biggest one, is to fail to gain wisdom. A person who gets older but not wiser has failed in the most fundamental way that a person can fail. In fact, you know, I don't presume to know or to predict what will happen when we stand before the throne of judgment at the end of it all. But I do know that this is one question God could ask that would reveal everything. You know, you could say, it's a simple question. Tell me what you've learned. And if the answer is, well, I guess I totally just learned that, you know, like you got to do what makes you happy. Then the lever is pulled, the trap door opens up, and enjoy your trip down south. That's how it could work anyway. The interesting thing to note here, though, is that people who make a point of claiming that they aren't ashamed of a certain thing will almost always go on to talk about that thing in a way that reveals that they are, in fact, deeply ashamed of it. I mean, there is nobody more ashamed of divorce than the person who goes around blowing a trumpet and declaring that they're not ashamed of divorce. That's why she talks about divorce in such a roundabout, euphemism-laden way, in a very sanitized way. She says that when you're truly in a situation that isn't functioning the way that optimally it hopes and wishes to be, we accept that and we improve our quality of life by moving forward. I mean, that means basically nothing. To the extent that it means anything at all, it sounds like she's talking about her decision to, say, cancel her gym membership or delete her Uber Eats app and use DoorDash instead. I mean, you cannot claim that you have no shame about something when you can't bring yourself to talk about it in an honest way. If you feel the need to lie to yourself about something that you've done, then you obviously are ashamed of it. And the biggest lie that Drew Barrymore tells, and that many divorced people tell, is that the divorce was something that just happened. They didn't choose it. They didn't walk into it knowingly, willingly, with their eyes opened. They say instead that the situation wasn't functioning optimally, like they're describing a malfunctioning smartphone. The only real role that they had to play in the collapse of their own marriage was just to accept it. You know, accept that it was happening, and there was nothing they could do to prevent it. But this is, again, a lie, and it's a lie that should be, in some sense, actually comforting to those unmarried younger people who are afraid of marriage because of the Drew Barrymores of the world. You know, the good news for you is that, well, for one thing, you're not going to accidentally end up with a self-centered bimbo like Drew Barrymore. You might end up with one like that, but only if you do it on purpose. The Drew Barrymores of the world cannot possibly present themselves as serious, trustworthy people for long enough to fool any man with more than 2 brain cells. But the other piece of good news is that despite the rationalizations some particularly dishonest divorce people make, the reality is that divorce is actively chosen. It is something that some couples work towards. Maybe not with divorce consciously in mind as the end goal, but they're working towards it all the same. It doesn't just happen. You don't fall into it one day like falling into a puddle. It doesn't arise passively out of situations. It is a conscious choice. And usually, not always, but usually one that both parties have a hand in making. Which means that staying married, being happy, is also a choice. You just have to make it. You make it today, and then you make it tomorrow, and then you make it the next day, until death do you part. It's pretty simple. Maybe not always easy, but it is simple anyway. And that's how you avoid ending up like Drew Barrymore, who is today canceled. That'll do it for the show today and this week. Talk to you on Monday. Have a great day. Godspeed.